Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and on this edition of the show, you'll meet Joe Spencer. He's the owner of Louisiana Creole Gumbo. He's opening a new location on Gratiot this fall, and he'll tell you all about it. Greenfield Village has opened the Jackson Home, a major strategic hub and sanctuary during the Civil Rights Movement. Patricia Maradian, president and CEO of the Henry Ford, will have the details on this historic site for us. And Mark Reith, the former owner of Atwater Brewery, is buying the business back. He'll tell us all about it. A great show about what's happening in and around the D right after these messages.
America 250, Michigan made.
For 2.5 centuries, America has pushed past frontiers, across oceans, across continents, and on to the moon. From the first steps at Tranquility Base to the new plans for the moon and Mars, this country keeps looking outward. But there's one landmark chapter in our history at a place called Hadley Eponine. Three explorers, David Scott, James Irwin, and Alfred Worden, took science farther than ever before on Apollo 15 with the first lunar rover. In that rugged terrain, they picked up a pale stone later called the Genesis Rock, a piece of the moon's ancient crust, some 4 billion years old. That crew is often called an all-Michigan team, as each astronaut was educated at the University of Michigan. And with America at 250, let us not forget these three original rock stars from Michigan.
America 250, Michigan made, from 760 WJR.
Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and we kick off today's show with Joe Spencer. He is the owner of Louisiana Creole Gumbo. Joe, welcome into Opportunity Detroit.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate being here and having this opportunity to speak with you and with your guests.
Well,
your audience.
Absolutely, Joe. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to get you on the show today because I saw a press release that indicated that you are now preparing to open a new location on Gratiot this fall. Tell us all about this.
Well, yes, we are. We are in the phase one of opening up our newest location. This is actually our new location, which originally is our headquarters. And we started this business in 1970 on Gratiot, about three blocks south of where we are now. And so we are opening it up. We've got a little different format this time. We had formerly been basically a carryout restaurant all those years at Gratiot, more than 50 years at Gratiot in St. Albans. But 2 years ago, we acquired this property, which is at 2830 Gratiot, about three blocks north of the old location. And in this new format, we're going to start off doing carry out. But we expect in the next 90 days, we will be doing dine-in as well at the location, table service. And so we've always thought we had a very fine dish of food and menu of food. But now we'd be able to do more than just carry out. You know, people be able to come in and sit down and enjoy a meal with us.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Talk to us about the menu, Joe Spencer. What's on this menu?
Well, you know, our menu is one that's based in the Louisiana Southern food category. Actually, our restaurant was founded by a gentleman by the name of Joseph Stanford. He was a chef. It's been many, many years traveling the country being a chef. He worked at the Book Cadillac back in the 60s and 70s here in Detroit.
Wow.
And in 1970, he decided to bring food from his home because he had grown up in Louisiana and had learned the tradition of Creole cooking from his mother. And so the recipes that we serve are more than 100 years old because, quite frankly, if he was alive today, he'd be like 120 years old.
Oh my gosh.
And he learned these recipes from his mother. But it's a Creole menu. We specialize in gumbos. We have five different kinds of gumbos, everything from hot and spicy to seafood to, you know, the vegetarian gumbo. And then we have the Creoles, which is like the tomato-based zesty kind of a flavor, which comes in seafood and chicken and so forth. And then we have the jambalayas, which is a favorite for everybody. It's kind of spicy with the sausage and chicken. And we have the red beans and rice, which we're really, really famous for our red beans and rice and our corn muffins. These are staples for us. And beyond that, we also have southern menus. We also have the baked chicken and the barbecue chicken and the fried catfish and a homemade meatloaf. These dishes also have the sides for macaroni and cheese and collard greens and candied yams and rice and gravy and those kind of good old southern traditions as well. And we are now going to add to our menu fried shrimp and fried chicken wings, which are everybody's favorite. And we've done it for catering, but now we're going to make it a regular part of our menu.
Well, Joe Spencer, this menu mm-hmm. sounds absolutely delicious. I can see why you have two locations. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the business, got involved with this.
Well, it's an interesting story. My original career was in broadcasting.
I remember that.
Channel 4 for a few years and then Channel 62 for a few years.
Yes.
And a buddy of mine who had been an anchorman at Channel 62, you know, I just got talking one day. I had an interest in being involved in real estate. I wanted to invest in buying an apartment. I invited him to join me. And he said, well, oh, Joe, that's good. I'd love to do that. He says, but, you know, I got another thought. He says, you know, there's a restaurant over on Gratiot that's got some really good food called Louisiane Creole Gumbo. And it's got some really good food. And I bet that if we went over and talked to the guy, we might be able to get a franchise from this guy to be able to set up a downtown Detroit. And I said, okay, I tell you what, let's flip a coin. If you win the toss, we go to the restaurant. If I win the toss, we go to the real estate broker. He won the toss. Okay. And it was from there. I had never been to the restaurant before, had seen it as I passed by on Gratiot, but never had visited the restaurant. And so we went over and we first of all tasted food, and I was like, my goodness, oh, this is so good. You know, we went a couple of times and tasting food, you know, trying the different recipes and, you know, the different offerings that they had. And finally we decided to approach the owner, Mr. Stanford. And when we approached him, you know, he said, hey, you know, we'd like to do the franchise and blah, 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 open up downtown. He said, well, guys, you know, if you'd come to me with this 10 years ago, I'd have been happy to do this. He said, but today I'm ready to basically retire. And if you can raise the kind of money that I need to retire, I'll sell you this restaurant, lock, stock, and barrel, wow, including my recipes, my secret spice blends. And he also had books that he had written. He had written a couple of cookbooks. And he also said, I'll sell you my inventory of books, the whole nine yards. Plus, he agreed that he would, and he did, stay for 1 year, solid 1 year, come to work every day to make sure that we understood for the fullness of what it took to create the menus that he had been working on, the recipes that he had been developing all these many years. So that's how I got started in it. So,
wow, what a great story. That's so interesting to me to hear a little bit about your journey and how successful you are, Joe, with this business. I mean, you've seen a lot of ups and downs in the city, and here you are opening a bigger location. Wow.
That's a blessing, yes. Yeah. And, you know, I look back at our graduate location at St. Auburn, and we've been there for many, many years. And, you know, when we had to leave, it wasn't under our terms, really, but we left. And we decided, okay, we're not going to rent from anybody ever again. We're going to buy. And it was one of those situations where, you know, one door closes, another open.
Right.
And we went from a carry-out to this dine-in. So this is a new experience for us, and we're excited about it. And, you know, as you say, we've had our ups and downs, as,
sure,
as
right.
many businesses have in this city. We've actually had two other locations over the years. We had one at one time down at the Rosa Parks Transit Center, and that lasted for a few years. And then we had another one out in Farmington, which Farmington Hills, more correctly. And we just bad timing in that case as well. So, but we are hanging on. We've had the restaurant at 7 Mile for now more than 10 years, and it's a success. Everybody loves it over there, and we're doing great.
Before I let you go, Joe, what's the secret here? Can you give some advice to somebody who might want to get involved in the restaurant business in Detroit?
Trick question. Well, I can just simply say that is that if you have interest in being in the restaurant business, make sure that what you are going to offer is something that people really want. You know, so often people get into restaurants because their mother cooked good food, or, you know, they have something that they do they think is very good, and that's fine. But I would suggest that before you make an investment that it costs, and it's a significant investment to open up a restaurant, particularly if you're going to open up a brick and mortar restaurant, you do some market testing. Make sure you go outside of your family to ask people how do they like it. You know, a lot of people are doing taking the food truck method. They start off with a food truck,
right.
If they get acceptance, they get acceptance. Then they start looking for a brick and mortar, which I think is smart. But you know, I mean, it's a tough business. It really is. You know, because there's an ever-changing taste for what the people like, and the costs are high. I mean, the food costs are rising as it is. Labor is not easy right now, you know, and hasn't been since the pandemic. But, you know, if you got a solid something that you believe in, you work at it, you can succeed.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. Joe Spencer, owner of Louisiana Creole Gumbo. Thank you for your time today and continued success.
Thank you.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, we'll tell you all about a new historical home at Greenville Village.
America 250, Michigan made.
She grew up in a Detroit church where Sunday morning sounded like a thunderstorm of soul and spirit.
You're the key to my peace of mind. Would you make me feel?
From the pulpit to the piano, her voice carried a country's hopes and heart.
Like a natural woman.
And when America needed a soundtrack for change, she gave it one.
You make me feel, you make me feel like a natural.
She turned gospel fire into soul anthems, blending church, blues, and pop into something unmistakably American. Her songs fill radios, records, and living rooms, reminding people what freedom and possibility were supposed to feel like. She would become the first woman ever inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, a voice of a generation, a daughter of Detroit, the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin.
America 250, Michigan made. From 760 WJR.
You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. The Jackson home is an unassuming Selma, Alabama bungalow, meticulously relocated and reassembled at Greenville Village in Dearborn. And it's now open to the public. Patricia Maradian, president and CEO of the Henry Ford, thank you for joining us today on Opportunity Detroit to talk about this. What a great story.
Thank you, Ann, and I really appreciate being with you.
So let's talk about this. What exactly is the Jackson home? I honestly had never heard about it until you guys started saying that it had come to Greenville Village.
Right. So the Jackson home was a home that was in a neighborhood in Selma, Alabama.
Okay.
And in the 1960s, particularly 64 and 65, it was a family's home, the Jackson family, and it served as a safe haven for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his collaborators as they worked on and strategized for the Selma to Montgomery marches of 1965. And it was a safe haven for them. They really weren't safe to stay in hotels. So Dr. King, who was friends with the Jacksons, called them and said, "Can you know, is your house available? We'd like to use it as our place when we are in town working on this march." So it's really symbolic of bringing liberty and justice and voting rights within the reach of all Americans. So you know, we were pretty excited to learn about it. We also did not know about it until the call came in.
Oh, wow, that's so interesting. Can you take us on kind of a little audio tour? What does it look like?
Well, first of all, and if I can, I'm just going to back up a little and just say that the Jacksons' daughter, Juwanna Jackson, is the only child of the Jackson, the Dr. and Mrs. Jackson, who were living at the home in the home at the time. And she called us in February of 2022. And she is now in her, you know, 60s. So she was a little girl at the time. And she remembers the whole thing. And she calls Dr. King Uncle Martin. And she basically said, you know, I need this home to be moved to Greenfield Village so this story can be preserved. Mm. And she went on to talk to us about the home and its contents. So the family saved everything.
That's amazing.
That was in, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is truly an amazing story. So back to your question of walk us through the house. When you go to this home now in Greenfield Village, we restored it exactly to how it was in 1965. Mm. So Juwanna Jackson's mother wrote a book about everything that happened, and that became our guide. Who was in the house? Who was coming and going? What happened in that house? How did the family, how did Mrs. Jackson feed all these people that were cycling through her house during the six-month period? What kind of phone calls were happening? So we walk everybody through that story, first by going through a gallery that's in the back of the house that we created, a separate building that takes people through the story of that time period. But then when you walk in the house, you walk through the door in the back that Dr. King walked through and all of his colleagues walked through every day during that period that they were there. And basically, you see the house as it was in 1965. Mm-hmm. You see the dining room table where they sat around and worked on the Voting Rights Act. You see the chair that Dr. King sat in, and it was featured on the cover. Sitting in the chair was featured on the cover of Life magazine, watching LBJ give his We Shall Overcome speech. And he watched it right from the living room of that home. We have that exact chair. We have all of the furniture that was in that home during that speech. So we recreated the home to that time period. So when people are immersed in the environment of what it must have been like to be in that home during that time. And of course, then they're learning the stories of what it took to bring this Voting Rights Act to the world. You then can walk through Juwanna Jackson's bedroom, and that's often where Dr. King would sleep. The exact mattress, the exact bed is still there. You walk through Dr. and Mrs. Sullivan Jackson's bedroom, and that's where he took all the phone calls when the president would call. You learn about that. You can actually push a button and hear the recording of Dr. King having a conversation with President Johnson about the voting rights and equality in voting for everybody. So this is a full, complete tour of a home that some history's very important story unfolded.
Yeah, it gives me the chills, actually. You know,
it gives you the chills when you're in it, too.
Does it really? Because it seems like, you know, you've got so many great things at Greenfield Village, Patricia, but really, this seems like this is a must-see and do thing when you go to the village. You've got to go to the Jackson home. This is history right before your very eyes.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, there are so many must-see things in Greenfield Village,
yes, right.
And this just added to it. This is the first building that we've added to the village since 1985, uh-huh. So it's been over 40 years, and it's a great addition because, and I don't know how many of your listeners would realize this, but there are a variety of Black heritage stories in Greenfield Village, and of course in the museum we have the Rosa Parks bus and the exhibit of With Liberty and Justice for All, and this house helps connect the dots to all of those important stories. And really, though, when it comes right down to it, this home is a story about an ordinary family, mm-hmm. a family that was just a, you know, he was, Dr. Jackson was a dentist, his wife was a school teacher, and they were an ordinary family raising their daughter in a beautiful upper middle class neighborhood in Selma, Alabama. And now they are deciding to take something on that was very risky. They risked everything because yeah. they knew that they wanted to make a better future, not just for their daughter, but for all the children who were growing up in the South who weren't going to have the right to vote.
I cannot get over the number of original artifacts that you have in this home. Isn't it interesting that they were able to save so much like that, and even why they decided to save it?
I don't disagree with you, but at the end of the day, they knew that what was happening was significant
yes.
in American history. And if you think about it, this happened in 1965. It was just a few short years later where Dr. King was assassinated. Mm. And, you know, the work of civil rights continues. This family lives well into the early 2000s. The last surviving person of Juana's parents was her mother, who passed in 2013. And, you know, she wrote the book about what happened, and they, you know, yeah, they remodeled the house, they expanded it a little bit, but they saved the furniture, they saved the dining room, they saved all of it and used it up until her death.
Wow.
And then Juana spent a good 10 years trying to figure out, you know, like, what do I do with this house? How do I continue to preserve this story? And she often will say, I made my parents a promise that I would take care of this, that I would continue this work, and she's done it.
Yeah, very, very impressive. How big is the house, would you say? I mean, it's a bungalow.
It's actually a good-sized bungalow. Okay. I would say it's, you know, 2,000 square feet, 2,500 square feet, but
wow.
don't, you know, I'm not exact on that.
Sure.
But it's a three-bedroom, two-bathroom bungalow, and it's quite lovely.
Yeah, it sounds fabulous. You know, I was recently at Greenfield Village. Mitch Albom read a portion of the Declaration
yes.
of Independence.
Yes,
and it
yes.
was so cool. It was so great to be there. And I hadn't been there in a while. And I said to my husband, we have to come here more often. This place is
yeah.
fabulous. I mean, Patricia Moradian, just to walk around and see the history and just on a beautiful day to go have a nice day. What a great
right.
place you have, both with the museum and the village. Talk a little bit about some of the great things happening right now.
Well, there's a lot of great things. Obviously, we want people to come and see the house and to experience the different aspects of the village. There's so much to do. And, you know, like you said, you can immerse yourself in history there, but
mm-hmm.
you could also come for a day and just enjoy the beauty
sure.
of the setting. Take a carousel ride on the train, have a great opportunity to ride in a Model T. Where else can you do that? you know, those are wonderful parts of Greenfield Village, not to mention the fantastic buildings that are there that are authentic and interpreted for, you know, accuracy in history. So Thomas Edison's laboratory, the Wright Brothers cycle shop, the courthouse where Abraham Lincoln practiced law, these are all unbelievable assets that we have in our own community to, you know, help inspire people to learn and to learn from mistakes and to learn about the, you know, where we can go in the future. But in the museum, we have equally incredible artifacts, exhibits, and also activities. We have a new exhibit called Fabric of America, and that's our fashions, textiles and technologies. It's really about exploring 250 years of our American identity through fabric and through fashion.
That sounds
it's
cool.
really awesome. It has over 500 artifacts, many of which have never been out of our archives. So if people want to see what's in our archives and doesn't get out, come to this exhibit and come to our other exhibit that we put together for also celebrating America's 250th called Handmade. And that's the crafting of America. And it really explores 250 years of how Americans have been creative and have used craftsmanship to solve problems, to show beauty, to do various different things. There's over 100 artifacts, again, that aren't often out, and those span folk art, textiles, ceramics, and furniture, and actually a lot more. So really fun exhibits that will not be out for months and months. I think Fabric of America closes on September 13th. handmade actually goes through the end of this year and into January of 27. So that's pretty exciting. So lots going on, lots to see and do, both inside and out.
That's very impressive. Patricia Mehradian, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Henry Ford. Can you tell our listeners, you know, how do you get tickets? What's the best thing to do with regard to ticketing?
Check our website, thehenryford.org. Everything you need is on there. If you want to come by, there's obviously ticketing offices in various places throughout the campus. So just start your visit online. That's what I would suggest.
Can you become a member, you know, a member of the Village and the Henry Ford, where you have
absolutely.
Kind of like a pass, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And membership has a lot of options and opportunities with it. There are various different kinds of memberships. You can also learn about that online. But basically, a membership gets you into the Village and the Museum for free all year long, as many times as you want. So it is really a great deal.
Patricia Mehradian, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Henry Ford, thank you for your time today. You really have a really cool job being the caretaker of this amazing historical place.
I wouldn't argue with that at all. And I am very, very, very fortunate to be in this position. But I will say, we have an incredible staff that makes this place go every single day.
Aww. Well, thank you for your time today. It was really nice to talk to you.
Oh, so good to talk to you, Anne. Thank you so much.
You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. Coming up next, the former owner of Atwater Brewery has bought the business back. We'll find out why in just a few minutes.
America 250, Michigan made.
He was born in a small Mississippi community in 1931, and as a child moved north to a farm near Manistee, Michigan with his grandparents, and eventually earned a scholarship to the University of Michigan, where he majored in theater and drama and developed his voice that would go on to represent America so well.
This is CNN.
That Michigan-shaped voice went on to define major roles in blockbuster films, such as the villain in Star Wars.
I am your father.
King Mufasa in The Lion King.
One day, Simba, the sun will set on my time here.
And even that quirky writer, Terrence Mann, in Field of Dreams.
It's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. Will most definitely come.
Across stage and screen, he became a symbol of depth, authority, and emotional power in American storytelling. From that one-room schoolhouse and family farm in Michigan, this is the journey of one unforgettable Michigan man, James Earl Jones.
America 250, Michigan made. From 760 WJR.
You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. Detroit entrepreneur Mark Reith has reacquired Atwater Brewery, and it's a full circle moment for this local businessman who is with us now to talk about it. Mark, welcome to Opportunity Detroit.
That's so great to be here. Looking forward to our discussion.
Well, tell us about this. What is going on?
That's great. So basically, you know, when I sold the company in 2020, I stayed around for a year and a half, and then I exited out in mid-2021. And then from there, kind of said, all right, what's the next chapter look like? And as a serial entrepreneur, dove into a couple of different opportunities because I can only play so much bad golf, right? That's the way I look at it. So, but the Atwater then was sold again from, I sold to Molson Coors, and they sold the business in 2023 to Tilray Inc. And at that point, Tilray took it over along with many other beverage companies over a two-year span of time. And basically what I did is I said, if I ever had an opportunity to buy the business back, I would absolutely look at it, and reached out, and it seemed to be the right time for them as well as myself. You know, I still own the real estate in Rivertown. And so we had a discussion for about 2.5, 3 months and came to an agreement, and here we are.
So, Mark, you owned the business for 15 years. Why did you decide, you know what, I want to give this another go? What was the reasoning behind the decision?
Well, I think a lot of it really has to do with my passion for Detroit beer, Detroit-owned businesses, the community, and giving back. That's part of it. The other one are the employees that are there that are new, and the employees that are still there when I sold the company. And I just saw such a great opportunity for the brand. The brand deserves more than it was getting, and it just seemed like the right opportunity to take the business over, grab the real estate back. I'm able to move my other businesses back into the offices there, and really just dive deeper again into Detroit out into Michigan, and as our slogan says, brewed in Detroit, raised everywhere.
Take us back to 2005 when you first operated Atwater Brewery, owner, operator. How did you get into the beer business in the first place?
Well, I loved beer, so that was number one.
I love it.
That started earlier in the college years, but when I moved back to Detroit in 1997, and I had a passion at that point, I said, I really wanted to start a business in Detroit, be part of the Renaissance. And that was the year that Atwater actually opened originally. So I was a patron, I was a home brewer, and just said, you know, if I ever had an opportunity, I'd love to have a beer business. And just over the years, started talking to the owners at that time and invested in 2002 and then bought it out in 2005.
Mm-hmm. So Atwater Brewery is an award-winning company. Tell our listeners what kind of beer can be found at Atwater Brewery.
Well, Atwater was founded originally on the traditional German-style lagers,
okay,
which is the heritage of the brand. All the equipment was brought in from Germany. The original brewmaster came in and stayed for 2 years, developed all the recipes, very unique. That's, you know, where all the awards came, international awards came from. And then what happened from there is that, you know, as drinking habits changed within the beer industry, and craft beer really started becoming more popular, we decided to look into other flavor profiles that maybe consumers wanted. And the big one that came up was Dirty Blonde. Mm-hmm. And that became, you know, probably 65% of our overall sales.
Oh, wow.
in one brand. And then we have a gamut of great products from a great American IPA to a hazy IPA to our great pilsners and lagers and our vanilla Java Porter, which is also another staple of ours.
Now, I know you don't want to give away any secrets, but what are some of the big plans that you have for Atwater Brewery moving forward, Mark Reith?
World domination.
I love it. How do you do that, though, Mark? How do you go about doing that?
Well, you do it one pint at a time. That's what you start with. So, I think what we really want to do is reestablish, you know, Detroit's brewery, Atwater, and build it from Detroit out again. That's how I did it years back. And just really dive deep into the community with the retailers, our distributors, all of our partners out there, and just make sure that everybody understands that, look, we're locally owned. We're locally supported. We support our communities. And we're going to do some really cool stuff in Rivertown. I'm excited about that. And then we're going to rebuild the brand and bring it back out. It still does very well in the marketplace. We just want to make sure that we continue that momentum and bring it back locally owned. And then also do a bunch of innovation. The beverage world is ever changing. And we're going to be a part of that innovation, and we're really excited about that part, too.
You also own Velvet Peanut Butter. That's a big name in Detroit. Talk about that. You bought that in 2025, Mark?
Yeah, I bought it in January of 25, and it was just an opportunity that came about. And, you know, I ate it growing up. you know, you got the Fresh, Pure, and Delicious boys on the label. And I have two brothers, so there's three of us, which was kind of cool. And it just, you have a 90-year-old iconic brand. It's very hard to establish brands. We already have an established one, and now we're just bringing that back out, not only across Michigan, but across the country over the next year or two.
And is all of this being done at Rivertown? And what are some of the changes that we're going to see at Rivertown?
Well, what we want to do is, obviously, we have a great tap house for customers to come in and experience Atwater and all the great beverages and food in our tap house. But we're also going to put in a Velvet House, which is going to be kind of cool and unique. And people can come in and buy peanut butter and buy all of our merchandise and all the things that we're going to do with the Velvet House, which is going to be really cool as well.
It sounds like you might be able to provide some tours for people.
Absolutely. That's a big part of it.
Oh, that's great. You know, you're part of Detroit's Renaissance. Talk a little bit about how that feels.
Well, it's great. I mean, I always talked about, you know, when in 08 and 09 and the bankruptcy and Detroit's tough, we're resilient. And look, we went through some hard times. Mm-hmm. And it was tough, and then you had the pandemic and all those things. But at the end of the day, you just keep going, and that's what the mentality of Detroiters are. And that's why I love the city. That's why I'm really excited to dive back in, because, you know, you define yourself in difficult times. It's easy to win, but when you're knocked down, are you going to stay down or are you going to get up and fight? And that's what Detroit's all about.
I love how you call yourself a serial entrepreneur. What kind of advice do you have for people that want to start a business in Detroit?
Well, I think that there's a ton of opportunity out there, you know, and speaking to young people in particular that want to, you know, do startups in whatever industry or business that is that you need to have that risk tolerance, right? So you, if you're going to get into a business, understand it's not going to be easy, but if you have a great service or a product and you have a good business plan, Detroit's there to support you. You just got to reach out and make sure that you're getting all that advice. And I would highly recommend, especially right now with the job market, you know, relying on yourself to generate income is better than trying to go get jobs these days. So if you have a great idea, a great service and a passion, and a great business plan, go for it.
The other thing I've heard from people like you who are successful in this area of entrepreneurship, Mark Reith, is that you cannot be afraid to fail. You're going to fail at something at some point.
Oh, 100%. I can tell you how many times I've failed over the years. And that's how you learn. You know, the key is that you learn from that failure, right? And you don't replicate it. But you're going to fail. And you know what? When you're a risk taker, that's part of the process, right? So not everything always works out 100%, but you learn from your failures and become better as a business person down the road.
Great advice. Mark Reith, the owner operator of Atwater Brewery and also of Velvet Peanut Butter, thank you for your time today and all the best on these projects.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
And I'm Ann Thomas. Thanks for listening to Opportunity Detroit, and enjoy the rest of your day.